One of my favorite stories from the book is when Morris is giving you a gold record for Hanky Panky, and you're walking down the hall with it, and he's like, where are you going with it?
That's right. We couldn't even keep our gold records. That's true. I had to steal them off the walls, you know, when nobody was looking. That's a true story. I mean, he wanted the gold record back so he could hang it on his wall.
That's great. That's great. And you know, the business side of record making is that you were not given the royalties.
No, that's true. It's a good thing. You know, of course, we were making money from other directions, like our concerts and BMI and ASCAP and that sort of thing. But we certainly were not going to get regular mechanical royalties out of roulette. It was like taking a bone from a Doberman. You know, it just wasn't going to happen. And so we had to constantly decide whether we were going to try to take our life in our hands and try to get out of this thing, or stick it out because we were having such great success there. And I think we made the right decision to stand because now I get to tell the story. So
very cool. Hey, talk about Crimson and Clover as a demo, and you never really got to release the version you wanted.
Right. Well, this is another true story, but this is, you know, Crimson and Clover was such an important record for us because it, you know, it allowed us to go, to sell albums and really sell a lot of albums for the first time. Roulette really was selling singles, and then Crimson and Clover really allowed them to get into the album market big time. And so Crimson Clover was such an important record for us, and we had this big thing planned of the release of Crimson Clover and everything. So we finished the record like in 5 hours, and I put a rough mix together, rough 7.5 on a 7.5 inch tape back then, and you know, I basically mixed it with my knees and elbows, you know, we just threw the faders up, and I was just going to be listening to it. So I happened to take it. We were playing in Chicago the next day, and I happened to take it up to WLS. And my friend John Rook, the PD up there, I play it for him. He says, "Oh, Tommy, that's great." And he says, and he had just at that time hired Larry Lujack, who you may remember. And he brings him in. He says, "Larry, listen to this." And unbeknownst to me, they taped my tape.
Oh.
And I get down. They said, "Well, good luck with it." And I get down back into the to the car. And WLS was on the radio, and as I'm getting into the car, I hear, "World exclusive on WLS." Oh,
oh,
and
no.
I go, "Oh my God." And so they were playing this horrible, rough mix, and that is the version I ended up having to release as the record. And so the record of Crimson and Clover is a 7.5 rough mix that I never got the final mix.
Well, that's a great story.
Yeah, and that's the truth.
That is a great story. And cover versions, Monet Monet, I Think We're Alone Now, Crimson and Clover, you got a whole new life, so to speak, through some of these cover versions.
Sure.
Yeah, talk about that.
Well, you know, we've had over 300 of our songs covered by everyone from Prince to the Boston Pops, you know. And we've been so lucky that our music has, you know, stayed in front of the public for 50 years. So all I can say is that we, you know, and in movies and TV and just you know, a lot of recordings. And so we've been very, very fortunate to have all of these covers done by all these. I just did Crimson and Clover 2 years ago with Dolly Parton, if you can believe it. and then about 2 months later, Prince put it out as his first digital album, and this was his first all-digital single, was Crimson and Clover.
Oh, very cool.
And went number one with it. So, we've just been really lucky in that.
Let's talk a little bit about the story behind Monet Monet. People ask me all the time because, you know, being an old rock and roll jock, what's Monet Monet about? What does Monet Monet stand for? I love this story.
Well, you know, when we originally started, we had no title. And this was one of those records where I just went in the studio and started gluing this sort of party rock three-chord progression together, and we'd often make records like that where we didn't know, you know, what we were doing. We just, Dragon Line was like that, where we just started playing something, a riff or something, and it turned into something. So that's what we did with Moni, you know, we basically glued it together over about a 3-4 week period. All these, you know, that that little part should go at the end of this, and so forth. And it was just, we called it sound surgery, and we just would splice pieces together. So finally, it was I was supposed to do the lead vocal, and we still had no title.
Wow.
And so we were pretty desperate, and we were looking for like a Sloopy or a Boney Maroney or something like that, some nonsensical name. And so Richie and I slam our guitars down. We're in Manhattan at my apartment, and we go out on the terrace and light up a cigarette, and we look up into the night sky, and our eyes fall on is the Mutual of New York Insurance Company. M-O-N-Y, with the dollar sign in the middle of the O and the time and the temperature. And we just started laughing because we figured that was God talking to us. That was the ultimate, that was the perfect way, that was the perfect title for this. And so the next night we went in and we put Moni Moni in the place where the title should be, and it worked, and that became the record. That's a real story.
Very cool. Visiting with Tommy James. He's going to be at our Surf Ballroom coming up Saturday, July 16th. Tommy, thank you. We look forward to it.
Great. Really looking forward to coming out, too.